You're listening Pretty Late, and this is a moment in Pretty Late history. Thank you so much, Speaker Madigan, for taking the time to join us today.
You're welcome.
I know you've got a busy schedule. There's a lot that's been said about you. You've been in office long enough for so many things to be written. But last week, former Governor Edgar, a respected Republican, said that you are not the villain that the media makes you out to be, and that even with a weak governor or an incompetent governor, the governor still has more power than the speaker. What did you think when the governor said that?
Governor Edgar and I had a good relationship when he was the governor and I was the speaker, and we've maintained a good relationship since. And so we see each other from time to time. We were together at a memorial in the Capitol building a few weeks ago for a man named Steve Schnorf. We sat right next to each other, exchanged some ideas and views on the current budget impasse, and I would say it was fair to say that he and I are pretty much in agreement on the problem and how we could solve the problem. So I've thoroughly enjoyed my relationship with Governor Edgar, as I did with Governor Thompson and Governor Ryan. You see, I've served under eight governors, and of the eight, five were Republicans. In the last seven, four were Republicans. And during the last seven, why, we always had a budget. So I would have differences with Governors Thompson and Edgar and Ryan, political differences, and there would be disagreements in the legislature, and there would be statements issued. But at the end of the day, we would bury our differences and come to an agreement on a budget. Now, that hasn't happened for the last 2 years. And I think it's fair to ask, well, what's changed? What's different between now and those prior seven governors? And obviously, it's the current governor, Mr. Rauner, who, in my judgment, is attempting to enact an extreme right agenda for Illinois, and I don't support that.
When you say extreme right, what do you think people think of when they hear extreme right?
Well, I know what I think of. I think, number one, he wants to take Illinois right to work, as happened in Indiana, in Michigan, and Wisconsin. After that, he wants to reduce the benefit level in workers' compensation. He wants to completely or partially repeal collective bargaining at the local level. He wants to repeal or change the prevailing wage, which is used in the construction industry to set wage levels. So if you look at all three of those areas, reduction in benefit and workers' compensation, repeal of collective bargaining, repeal of the prevailing wage, what you're really doing is lowering the wages of the middle class, lowering the standard of living of the middle class, and driving injured workers to welfare and to the emergency room. That's his agenda, and I don't support that agenda.
There have been governors in the past, Republican governors, who might have had an extreme right agenda, but you found ways to work with them. Mm. Is part of what goes into Governor Rauner's experience in having no political experience, no executive experience, do you think that has a role to play here?
Well, let's go back to those prior Republican governors, Thompson, Edgar, Ryan. They were all card-carrying Republicans. They were Republicans in good standing, but they were not extreme right Republicans attempting to work an extreme right agenda on the state of Illinois. Illinois is a moderate state. You know, it's a moderate state. It's not an extreme state. And the Rauner agenda is extreme. I think you make a good point that he came here without any governmental experience, and I wouldn't hold that against him so long as he came into government with an open mind, asking people, work with me, asking people, how can we get this done? He could have gone to those prior Republican governors, but he has unilaterally rejected their advice.
When you say that Illinois is a moderate state, I mean, there are people in other parts in the state, and I've watched this from the press box, where there are a lot of times where the city of Chicago is accused of causing a lot of our problems, being a source of so many of our issues that we are in now, whether it's the pensions or the corruption in the city of Chicago. And I've seen really people just yell about, you know, this bill is good if you live in Chicago. What do you say to people in the rest of the state who feel that that's the case?
Well, Illinois is one state with many parts. Chicago is an urban area. Far downstate Illinois is very rural. As you travel the state, you meet a lot of different people, a lot of different concerns. Concerning Chicago, why, Chicago historically has been the economic engine for the state of Illinois. And if you look at the tax receipts under the Illinois income tax, vast majority comes from Chicago, but then the money is spent statewide. And so in the government and in the legislature, why we make good effort to reconcile all of these differences, recognize competing legitimate interest, reconcile the differences, and try and be responsive to the problems of everybody in the state, Chicago plus the suburbs, plus the central part of the state, plus the downstate section. Obviously, it's not an easy job. It's made easier if people are cooperating, if people are reasonable, if people are not trying to advance an extreme agenda.
And when the governor gave his budget address, he mentioned that there was a grand bargain in the works in the Senate and that he would not interfere. What would you say happened in the weeks after that?
I would say that the grand bargain started to develop in a way that the governor didn't like, so he did get involved. And relative to the grand bargain, what it really means is that people are talking to each other, attempting to interact with each other. Same thing happens in the House. We have a caucus meeting scheduled for tomorrow, and the topic in the meeting will be the budget. And so everybody is here, everybody is working, everybody would like to end the impasse. I think if you were to poll the members of the legislature, it would be unanimous. I'd like to end the impasse. And I'm sure that the citizens of the state feel the same way.
They felt that way for a while. I know when I first started coming down here after the funds were cut on World Autism Day to autism programs, to the Epilepsy Foundation of Illinois, drug cessation programs, Meals on Wheels, just countless programs. People, I spoke with Representative Sullivan, who said, well, the state is struggling. Everyone's going to have to suffer. Would you say that that's been the case during the budget impasse? Because it seems to a lot of people that the vulnerable have been suffering the most, the elderly, the disabled, students. Do you think that the people, it seems as though there is almost there are casualties in this battle of the wills. How do we help those people?
By resolving these differences. The historic fact is that Governor Rauner hijacked the Illinois budget-making process in order to leverage the implementation of his agenda on workers' compensation, collective bargaining, prevailing wage. He attempted to hold hostage the budget-making. He's been successful. But the people that have been held hostage would be the people in Illinois who depend upon state funding for autism services, the people in Illinois who depend upon state funding for breast cancer screenings, the people in Illinois who depend upon state funding for child abuse prevention, and the people in Illinois who depend upon state funding for sexual assault services. Those are the people who have been held hostage. Those are the people that have been hurt. They should not have been hurt. But let's not forget, I did not propose holding hostage the budget-making process. I did not propose that. Governor Rauner proposed it. He's done it for 2 years. He's very clear, very straightforward, and he would say, I'm not going to do a budget until I get changes in workers' compensation, collective bargaining, prevailing wage. That drives down the wages and the standard of living of middle-class families, sends workers to the emergency room and to welfare.
You've talked about how Governor Rauner, his approach is that he is, one, holding hostage the budget, and that he has this right agenda. What values do you bring when you approach any sort of situation? What is your strategy when it comes to making a deal or working with people on both sides of the aisle?
Here again, I've done this for a long time. If you don't believe me, read the Tribune. I'll explain it to you.
They sure will.
Okay. I've done it for a long time. 8 prior governors. The last 7, we always had a budget. Why? Because after we worked through our partisan differences, we recognized that we had to be reasonable on the budget making. We adopted a budget so that the services of the state would be delivered to the people that need the services of the state. The state would properly fund education. We would properly fund human services. We would properly fund the child welfare program, the child support program. All those things happened under 7 prior governors, 4 of whom were Republican.
And people would say that, you know, so a lot of the problem also is because of the failure to meet our obligation when it comes to pensions. And I spoke to a representative who told me that he had served in the 80s and that the pensions had been used kind of as a credit card. and that people didn't really fully understand what the implications would be down the road. Would that be your assessment?
Well, two things happened. The pension systems were underfunded, exactly what you just said. In addition, the benefit level was increased through legislation signed by governors. And the people supporting those benefit enhancements in the pensions were both Democrats and Republicans. You put the two together, and that's why there's such a funding shortfall in the state pension systems today.
And the other thing that people point to are their taxes. You know, people, this is something, these are the words that people hear. I want lower taxes, or we pay too much in taxes. Mm-hmm. If we tax the wealthy, then that will drive jobs. The millionaires will leave the state and create businesses in other states. What I've been researching is the flat tax. And I know that you've been here just shortly after the Constitution made the flat tax part of our state. And that was when inequality between the wealthy and the working class was much closer than it is now. Can you tell us a little bit about how we really do? Maybe is there a way to modernize our tax system in Illinois? I know that's a much bigger thing. Maybe it's part of the broader picture.
No, it's a good legitimate question, a good legitimate point. Illinois has a flat tax system on its income tax. That's a result of the Constitutional Convention in 1969 and 1970. By the way, the person you're talking to was a delegate at that convention.
Okay. I thought you might have been.
Right. That could be changed. There could be a constitutional amendment, which has been offered before the legislature, that would make the Illinois income tax a progressive tax, like almost every state in the nation, including the federal income tax. So the federal income tax is a progressive tax. It has rising brackets.
Right.
Same thing could happen in a state, and it could happen in this state. Illinois is a modern, big state, with a lot of problems and a lot of people in the state that need government help.
Right.
If you start with that and you accept that, well, then you're going to need money to pay for that. All right? And the question there is, well, should there be fair distribution among those paying the tax or not? The flat tax does not result in a fair distribution, but the progressive tax would.
And that seems as though, I mean, what would it take to get there? Is there political will on both sides?
Well, there's strong political will. You would need a resolution of the legislature adopted by 3/5 in the legislature. So I say there's strong will. I'm not sure if it's at level 3/5. But there's a good amount of support in the legislature and in the general population for the proposition there should be a progressive income tax, which translated means that if you make more money, you pay more money.
It would make sense.
Right.
Now, you mentioned that you were a delegate at the Constitutional Convention, and you've been in office 1971?
I started here in 1971.
Do you, there's part of the governor's agenda is term limits.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to tell the people when it comes to this push for term limits? Because I've seen in other states there have been mixed results.
Yeah. I support term limits as administered by the voters of the state of Illinois. I stand for election every 2 years in a primary and a general election. In the last primary election, the Rauner people spent over $1 million in Illinois House District to try and defeat me. And the people of my district voted for me and returned me to the legislature. So the best implementation of term limits is one administered by the voters of the state.
That's I've wondered about that. I've wondered about your district because it does seem, I mean, that's what people seem to not understand is if something's working for you in your community, that makes sense. But I think that people in the rest of the state of Illinois feel like what's not working for them, they feel like that you're part of that problem. Mm-hmm. Can you tell them why you are working, what the broader picture is, why it's so important to protect workman's comp, why it's important to protect retirement funding, mm-hmm. important to protect to increase the wages for the state of Illinois?
Yeah. It's all about quality of life for working people. We're not talking about quality of life for wealthy people. We're talking about quality of life for people that go to a job, only ask for a decent salary, which would enable them to pay rent, pay a mortgage, educate children, care for the elderly in the twilight of their lives. That's what we're talking about. And for me, the idea that for working people, people that just go to a job, we're going to reduce their benefit level if they're injured on the job, we're going to eliminate their right to bargain collectively on wages and conditions of employment, and we're going to eliminate the prevailing wage in the construction industry, is just a reduction in wages and standard of living for working people. And it drives injured workers to welfare and to the emergency room. That's what it's all about. That's what's happened in other states, and that's what I don't support.
One of the things that I've talked to Senator, former Senator Dan Katowski about is that if you pay now or pay later. And it's been very hard for me to explain that to listeners because there's a lot of cynicism. There's a lot of apathy in the state of Illinois when it comes to our political system. Is there something you can say that you think you can say to them to encourage them to become part of the solution?
Mm-hmm. I would encourage them to register to vote and to vote. and to vote their interest as they see their interest. That's the beauty of America.
Right.
That's the beauty of Illinois. Everybody can vote, but you have to do it. Okay? And I have a favorite expression on American elections, which is the people that win American elections are the people that vote. If you don't vote, you lose. And Hillary Clinton can speak to that with great expertise.
Well, that was one of the things that drove me crazy during the primaries was only 16%. In the gubernatorial race, only 16% of voters showed up in the state of Illinois.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And sometimes you get what you get.
Well, people should vote.
People should vote. Well, one of the things the governor has said that he is seeking is a permanent property tax freeze. And again, that's something that people find alluring because, oh, yes, let's stop paying something. Let's stop the increases here. Why is that something that you fight against?
Well, he talks about a freeze. The House of Representatives has already adopted the real estate tax relief package, which does not freeze but reduces taxes for certain real estate taxpayers, mainly small homeowners. And so the House package would increase exemptions known as the homestead exemption, the senior citizen exemption, the senior freeze exemption. It's targeted tax relief to real estate taxpayers that are needy, in need of help. The governor would just freeze across the board, which means both wealthy and not so wealthy people would get the benefit. Plus, if you're concerned about institutions such as the Chicago Board of Education, which is severely short of funding even today, that would limit their ability to keep the schools open in Chicago and open them up in September. Those are the problems with the governor's suggestion. In the case of Governor Rauner, you have to understand that just about everything he does is poll-driven. They do multiple polls. They're polling all of the time. And they predicate governmental decision-making almost exclusively on the polls. So it's easy to say, let's freeze the taxes across the board. It's better to say, let's give some targeted real estate tax relief to people that really need it without hurting school districts like Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a Chicagoan, I think everybody would want them to finish the current school year and open up in September on time.
That's something, and I know that the school year is something that is a goal often when it comes to budget decisions. Yeah, we were talking a little bit about Governor Rauner's experience, previous experience as a businessman, as somebody who was able to make the right investments, make the right decisions. And people seem to value that. A lot of people said, well, if he can run a business, surely he can run a state. And I've argued about this on my show with people, the idea that somehow it's admirable to accumulate that kind of power in the business world and then transfer that over to running a government. People feel as though you've been in office for such a long time that you've accumulated a tremendous amount of power. And that to them, you know, there are a lot of people who call for, you know, term limits for leaders. What do you have to say to people when it comes to that, the experience or whether or not you've accumulated this much power that you somehow, I mean, people feel as though you have a lot of power.
Mm-hmm. I would refer you to the remarks that you used earlier coming from Governor Edgar, where Governor Edgar appeared at Southern Illinois University and he talked about power relationships in the Illinois government and relative to my alleged power, he said even a weak governor's got more power than the speaker does. Okay, so Edgar's an experienced governmental official. He's in a position to speak from his experience and to give us some insight, which I think is very accurate in this case.
When Representative Feigenholz was on Steve Cochran's show last week on WGN, he really wants you on his show, too, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yeah.
He's on in the mornings. So there might be more people listening, just yeah. So you know.
He really doesn't help his case.
Really? What does he say? I'm not familiar.
I don't know the gentleman.
One of the things that she asked him to do was to look at the history of the state of Illinois and how many times a budget has come across the governor's desk and how many times we've had a budget.
Mm.
But she also told me to ask you what you've been reading lately. She recommended that I ask you that because I've been reading about our second governor of Illinois and I've been fascinated about that, Governor Coles.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm,
to that, I was wondering...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
what you see yourself, you know, and the broader picture in the history of Illinois. We're approaching our 200th birthday. 40 right. years, sir.
Right. Do you want to know what I'm reading?
Yes, I do.
I don't know the name of the book, but it's concerned with voting habits in Louisiana.
Okay.
And the author is from the Berkeley, California, very liberal, and she spent a great deal of time with Republican voting working people in
yes.
Louisiana.
Where, I don't know the name either.
Right,
yes.
Where there's a great deal of environmental problems in the state. You know, there's leaking oil refineries mm-hmm. and pipelines are broken. And bottom line, why working people in Louisiana, despite these environmental problems, are voting Republican. They're voting for Republicans that want to reduce the funding or eliminate the Federal Environmental Protection Agency.
Correct.
Even though they've got real serious problems in the Louisiana. And the author makes the point that there are other considerations. There's church-going considerations. There is the idea that, okay, there's a trade-off here, and I'll do the trade-off so long as I have a decent job. If I'm a pipe fitter in a refinery, I'm going to get a decent salary and decent level of compensation, and I'll live with the bad environment because it's a decent trade-off that I'm willing to do. It's a very interesting book, and the author spent 4 to 5 years very intimate contact with these families. They would invite her to their family meals, and she could listen to political discussions within a family. And when I say a family, it's 10 to 15 people.
Right.
But a big point she made was the influence of churches. Protestant churches, evangelical churches, and people use the word churched.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's churched. And that easily relates to Republican voting in Louisiana.
And so do you think that the Democrats then, I mean, what's the path forward for Democrats? Because right now they're certainly afloat.
Well, let's not forget that the Democratic candidate for president won the popular vote. Let's not forget that. So, you know, in America, why people voted for Hillary Clinton. Given the electoral system, Donald Trump was elected as the president. So I know there's a lot of commentary that the Democratic Party is in trouble and it needs to change. And in the Democratic Party will change. There's no question about that. But let's not forget that we did win the popular vote in the last presidential election. And here in Illinois, we're a party that doesn't agree with the idea that the government should be used to reduce wages and standard of living. Because that's the Rauner proposal. The Rauner proposal would say, let's change history. If you go back to the election of Franklin Roosevelt in 1932, prior to Roosevelt's election, the federal government wasn't greatly involved in the management of the economy.
Right.
But when Roosevelt became the president in 1933, federal government became very active using the Federal Reserve and the Treasury and the Congress in managing the economy. And from 1933 until today, both Democratic and Republican presidents and members of the Congress have always worked to raise wages, raise the standard of living. The Federal Reserve does a great deal of that right now. Here in Illinois, the Rauner proposal is, let's change that history. Let's not have the government working to raise wages and the standard of living. Let's have the government work to lower wages and the standard of living by bringing down the benefit level and workers' compensation, taking away the right to bargain collectively if you work for a government,
right.
And if you work in the construction industry, taking away the prevailing wage. That's the proposal. And it would be a proposed change in history. I don't support it.
Well, I know that you had WGN Radio broadcast that they reported that you have sent representatives to hopefully work with Governor Rauner in the hopes of finding a compromise.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What do you are you hopeful?
We're within 3 to 4 weeks of the scheduled adjournment
right.
of the legislature. And as you know, Governor Rauner has attempted to hold hostage the Illinois budget making to get what he wants on off-budget issues.
Right.
So whether you like it or whether you don't, the consideration of the off-budget issues will be here It will happen in the Capitol building. In light of that, I appointed some of the best representatives in the House, Representative Curry and Representative Lang and Hoffman and Turner, is a negotiating team to work with the governor or whomever he designates on the off-budget issues. Now, the off-budget issues are brought to us by the governor. They're not brought to us by people in the legislature. They're brought to us by the governor. We want to have a good quality discussion, a good quality negotiation on these issues. The people that I appointed are some of the best in the House, and they know these issues with great detail. So if the governor wishes, it could be a very fruitful discussion, very fruitful negotiation. I would prefer to do what we've done seven times under Governor Rauner, put aside his extreme agenda and just adopt a budget. That's important to remember. Over 2 years under Governor Rauner, the governor and the legislature have done seven budget-making bills. So today there's this comment, well, there is no budget.
Right.
If you just take it as there is no budget, you could think to yourself, well, they haven't adopted any budget bills. Well, that's not true. We've adopted seven budget bills where the governor has dropped the extreme agenda. That's what I would prefer to do. That's what I've recommended for 2 years because of the debt situation of the state. The state today owes $13 billion to people and companies that have provided services and products to the state of Illinois. People are being made to wait for their money. $13 billion. That should not happen. That should be corrected. We should be busy correcting that budget problem.
It seems as though it's for people when they hear the number $13 billion, how do you ever recapture that? How do you ever catch up?
Well, it's given rise to a new business. And so there's a business with good financial backing that will get the vouchers that these providers have and buy the voucher. And they wait for the state money because in Illinois, after 90 days, you get 1% a month when you wait for your money.
Right.
That's 12% a year.
Yeah, it's it has been drastic for a lot of people I know that provide social services that help the elderly. I asked briefly in between another question. How do you see your role in the broader picture in the history of Illinois, as we approach our 200th anniversary?
Sure. I've been here a long time, and people have asked me that question. Usually, the question is framed by asking, "Well, what do you think your legacy will be?"
Hmm.
Yeah, my legacy will be my family.
Okay.
A wonderful wife and four children. You know, one of the children, Lisa, the Attorney General of Illinois.
I think I've heard
there are three other children, and they all go to work, and two of them have families, and they've provided for four grandchildren. So that's my legacy. It's family-related, and that's something I'm very comfortable with.
Before we go, what do you want the legacy to be for the citizens of Illinois? What do you want them to experience?
The best experience that they can possibly have. I mean, that's the promise of America. So the promise of America is come to our shores, go to a job, work, care for your family, right? That's the promise of America. That's what should be happening in Illinois today. It's not happening because this particular government is not functioning well. My view is it's not functioning well because we have an extreme governor trying to advance an extreme agenda on the people of Illinois, which would just drive down wages and the standard of living.
I lied. I have one more question, maybe two. Well, now somebody asked me to ask you this. How do you unwind? What do you do to relax? Play golf? Do you watch TV? What do you do? Racquetball? I don't know.
One thing I use an exercise bike in the morning, which I did today. I spend time with my family. I try to golf. I'm honest about it. Right.
That's
you know, when you ask people, do you golf? Oh, yeah, I golf. Well, I try because it's not pretty when I'm out there.
I cut the grass around the ball. That's what I do. Very, very, very small patches of cut grass. My other question is, would you consider letting us catch up with you again if I could interview you as go on?
Right.
Hopefully things improve in the state of Illinois.
We certainly hope so.
Yeah. I appreciate your time so
Thank
much,
you.
Sir.
Thank you. Sure.
Thank you.
All right.